It probably comes as no great surprise to you when I tell you that I really have a soft spot for visiting churches when I get to travel. And that was especially evident when Tevis and I were in Provence last month. We had a look inside of a lot of churches. One of the things I discovered while I was there was that there's a whole tradition about Mary Magdalene in that part of the world. I didn't know that. But there's a belief, and there's a little bit of evidence, that she and Lazarus and some others, that they fled the Holy Land, and they ended up in Provence, which is where Mary Magdalene lived out her years. That's the story. And so we stopped at the Basilica of Saint Maximin le Saint-Baume, which possesses an important role in Mary's story. It's believed that this is her final resting place, and we got to see some relics that were prominently displayed in the church. And it was really, really fascinating, and I'm going to save the rest of that for another sermon. Anyway, Tevis and I, we stopped in a number of churches, and probably in just about every place we visited, we went to the church in the center of town. And that's not just true of this trip. It's something we've done for years. Back when I was in seminary, one of my professors, and this was like in the first couple of weeks of school, he advised us to pay attention, pay special attention to church buildings and to the architecture. You pay attention to the design and the shape and the materials and the furnishings and the decorations. He said you should do this because it will be a strong clue in helping to understand what the occupants of that building actually believe. And I've subsequently found that to be most helpful advice. For example, if there's an altar at the center of the room, that usually indicates a group of people who value highly the sacrament of communion. If the stage is filled with musical instruments or we have a large choir stall, that typically suggests that music is an important part of a congregation's worship life. Likewise, a play space with toys might suggest that this is a congregation that views children as being welcome during worship. Noting whether there are pews or chairs, and we'll just move on from that. They laughed at the early service too. Back in 1985, when I was doing an internship in Newfoundland, we went into and visited one church the pulpit just bowled us over. The pulpit was actually a ship's prow. It was quite literally the bow of a boat, and it projected high and out into to the congregation. And safe to say that preaching was a priority in this congregation. And I walked up into the pulpit, and frankly, I found it rather intimidating. And I can only imagine what it would be like to be on the receiving end of a sermon preached from that place. It also seemed to make some sense. This was a community that was located on the ocean, and somehow the prow of a boat for a pulpit, it just seemed to fit the local culture. Back in 1998, when Tevis and I were in Ireland, we spent a part of our time on a place called the Dingle Peninsula, which is a most beautiful place. I recommend it highly. And we stopped by a small chapel that's referred to as the Galerus Oratory. The dating of this chapel is a bit uncertain. It gives the impression of being quite ancient. There's a picture of it on your bulletin cover, so you can see what it looks like. And if you look closely, it's constructed of really tight-fitting stones, and it's in the shape of an overturned boat, which again seemed to fit with the place. Of course, the church has long been associated with ships. Recently here, we talked a bit about how the anchor has been a very important symbol within the Christian church. It certainly in the first years, the first century of the Christian church's life, it was probably more prominently displayed than the cross. But also, the symbol of the boat has been very important to the church. In church parlance, this main part of the church building that accommodates the congregation is referred to as the nave. And yes, that's the same word from which we get our word navy. And a good many older churches, and you see this quite, this is certainly true in Europe, if you look up in the nave, you can see that it does look like an overturned boat. If you were to research the organization, the World Council of Churches, you'll see that they've chosen as their logo the symbol of a boat out on the sea, and instead of a mast, it has a cross there. I have a symbol like that on one of my stoles, on my green stole. And so it's an ancient Christian symbol, is the boat, symbolizing the church carrying the good news of Jesus out into the whole inhabited world. And that word for the whole inhabited world is a Greek word, koumene. And that's used in a variety of places in the New Testament. And it is the source of our modern word, ecumenical. So boats and the Christian church, they've been connected for a long, long time. And maybe that shouldn't surprise us. After all, at least a portion of the inner circle of those first disciples were those who fished for a living, were those for whom boats were a key part of their life. Moreover, there's our scripture reading for today. One of the most memorable passages in all the Gospels. Jesus walking on water. The subject matter being, well, it's created no shortage of jokes, a few of which are actually kind of funny. Most of them kind of wear after a while. But the context of the story is this. Jesus, having just heard of the death of John the Baptist, he attempts to withdraw from the public to be by himself, and that shouldn't surprise us because he's just heard this really distressing piece of news that his cousin has been murdered. But he is pursued by the crowds, and when he looks at all the people, their need literally hits him in the gut. That's actually the terminology that's used. We would say today that his heart was moved, and in some of our translations of the Bible, that's what it says. If you were living in the first century, you would say that you felt your emotions in your gut, because that's where it was believed emotions would reside in a person's body. He was profoundly moved by their plight. And he begins to heal their ills. And of course it gets late in the day and the people are hungry. And so he miraculously feeds 5,000 men plus all the women and all the children and attends. So a lot of people got fed that day. So it's an extraordinary miracle. Is also the source of what I think are some better jokes. But as soon as that's done, he sends the crowds on their way, and he makes the disciples get into a boat and head to the other side of the lake. He, in turn, goes up onto the mountain to pray, and he's all on his own. But while he's praying into the evening, the disciples, well, they shift from enjoying their pleasant evening on the water to a kind of a hold on, Newt, I think we're going down kind of situation. And so a storm kicks up and they find themselves in some serious wave action. They're battling some high winds. And after midnight, they're still trying to get to the other side and they're starting to worry that they might not. And remember, these aren't just weekend boaters. These are pros. This is how they make their living, right? And so you know that if they're scared, as we'd say in our family, they're in a bit of a situation. Okay, little time passes. We're now in the wee hours of the night, or more accurately, it's just before dawn. And the disciples, they're tired, they're cold, they're wet, and they're wondering if the end is nigh. Then one of them sees something coming. And he calls to the others. And no, it's not really something coming, it's someone coming. Someone who appears to be walking on the surface of the water. Yeah. And if they were afraid to begin with, I mean, they were perilously close to a watery grave, and now they find themselves being approached by an apparition, by a ghost. Things have gotten worse. Spirits are coming towards them. But of course, it's Jesus. That's just walking towards them. And he's aware of their terror, and he says to them, "It's okay, it's me." Incidentally, anyone in that boat that particular night who simply believed Jesus to be a great moral teacher, They were now revising their opinion. Because he was clearly much, much more than that. He mastered not just ethics, but he was a master of nature itself. Jesus said, "Don't be afraid." To which, of course, Peter responded, "Don't you care we're going to drown, Master?" Well, no. That's not what he says at all. That's what the disciples say 6 chapters earlier in Matthew's Gospel, or in Mark chapter 4. You remember, that's where Jesus is asleep in the back of the boat, and they wake him up to calm the storm. Now, what happens here is that Peter says, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Okay, time out. Would you say that? I mean, really? I mean, I get the "if it is you" part. The thought of Jesus strolling along the waves would be a new concept. I would go, "Whoa, is that you?" That seems like a natural thing to say in what's really a most unnatural circumstance. "Wow, is that really you, Jesus?" It's the other part of the statement that I find rather confusing. You see, we've got this major storm happening. There's the threat of drowning. And suddenly Jesus appears walking on the surface of the water. This is not exactly a common occurrence in these parts. It's not a common occurrence in any parts. And our Peter's asking if he can join Jesus on his saunter on the surf. I would say that statement is rather irregular. Okay, so let's just hold that thought for a minute. Jesus hears Peter's request, and he's quite amenable. He indicates simply that he wants Peter to join him. And amazingly, Peter actually gets out of the boat and begins to walk on the water towards Jesus. It is this amazing display of trust and commitment that is until Peter suddenly becomes aware of just how windy it is, and his nerve starts to leave him, and as his nerve leaves him, he starts to sink into the water. And he calls out to Jesus, "Lord, save me." And of course, Jesus does indeed save him. He reaches out, he grabs Peter's hand, he draws him out of the water, and he says to him, "When'd you get to be such a chicken, Pete?" Or words to that effect. That's what he's saying. And the story ends with the wind dying down and the disciples worshiping Jesus, declaring that he is indeed the Son of God. Now, I've been following Jesus for a good while now, and some of you I know have been doing the same for considerably longer. And I think it's safe to say that being a disciple is just a strange business. In fact, it's not just strange. At times, it's a little perilous. Like you, there have been times when I found myself in places that I just wouldn't have gone if it hadn't been for him. No way. On Thursday and Friday, a number of us here attended the Leadership Summit, which is a conference on leadership, the speakers were stunning. We will talk to you about the Leadership Summit on a future occasion, but one of the speakers was a small business owner from the American Midwest. And he described making some idle conversation and talking to someone who was involved in mission work about how he'd love to take part in some short-term mission somewhere. And then he confessed to the camera that the only reason that he'd said that was because, well, Christians are supposed to say that. You know, "Oh, I'd just love to do some mission work." At the same time knowing that he had not actually the slightest desire to do a mission. That's the last thing he wanted to do. It was just what he thought he was supposed to say. Some months later, he found himself drilling wells in Southeast Asia. His life is completely changed. And more importantly, his work is bringing an improved life to communities where clean water is at a premium. See, Jesus invites us to places we would never choose to be about going to do the work of the kingdom of God. And really, whose idea was it to be out of the boat in the first place? It wasn't the disciples. Jesus is the one who told them to get into the boat and take it across the lake. He's the one who skippers this vessel we call the church. And it can be a most unnerving place at times. Oh, sure, we call this place a sanctuary. And while it really can be a refuge, while it can be a place of refueling and rest, it's also a vessel that's taking us somewhere. And that journey to somewhere, it can be a rough, rough ride. The church is the safest place in the world, and paradoxically, it can also be the riskiest place in the world. Because discipleship does, and many here can attest to this, discipleship does in some way cost you your life. But back to Peter. That every person disciple who at times is trust and at other times he's doubt. Peter thinks he recognizes Jesus and he calls out, "Lord, is it you?" And that's brilliant, really, isn't it? If it is you, that is so much the right thing to ask. Is it really you who's calling me out, God? Because if it is, then nothing else really matters. I'm as safe as houses, even if it costs me my life, because I'm with God. This fall, we're going to be doing some work here together at the church, and we're going to be trying and look at some ways of determining whether that small voice we're hearing, or that nudge we're feeling, that picture we're seeing, that discontent that we're sensing, whether that might just be Jesus speaking to us, calling to us, leading us, or whether it's just indigestion. If it's really you I'm seeing, I'm hearing, I'm sensing, then okay. I'm going to get out of the boat. Because walking on water isn't actually something that's done in the boat, right? You have to take a step outside. And that's the other thing. Our faith is such that there are going to be times where we're going to be called to take some risks when it may be just us on our own. Of course, we're not really on our own, but we are called to step out in faith in a most personal way. And I think you got to love Peter in this story. Man, he's impressive. I mean, he risked failure in the most magnificent way. He put his following of Jesus before his fear. And for a while, he did walk on water with Jesus. Did he look a bit silly when he went under? Yeah. But then again, 11 others in the boat, they didn't have the experience, at least for a while, of being out there walking with the one they knew to be the Son of God. And this is our situation, isn't it? Maybe things are kind of placid for you right now, or maybe you're in the midst of a storm. And if things are placid, be comforted. Because this story's still for you, because experience tells us that the wind will soon pick up for you somewhere. But whichever it is for you, I know that Jesus is still in the business of calling people out of the boat. That's where he does his best work. And he's calling us to join him. Join him in doing what? Well, I can't tell you what it is for you. All of our callings are a bit different. But it'll be something. And yes, you might fail. If you're as an imperfect disciple as I am, I can pretty much guarantee you'll fail. And that's okay. Because he's there to pick us up, to pull us out. But for a while, you may just get to walk on water with him. Frankly, I can't imagine anything finer.